permission.
Okay, so I have your permission to record you?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm calling from the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, and we'd very much like to get your views as someone with experience having covered the crisis, and of course your books, plural, just to get your sense of the causes and maybe ask you a couple other questions beyond that. This is, as you know, it's recorded for the history books, or at least the National Archives. And if you like, we could just start with the formality of you stating your name and your affiliation. And if you want to start out with some of your thoughts on the causes, that'd be great.
Sure. My name is David Faber. I am a longtime reporter, anchor here at CNBC, and have been covering business and financial news for the last 24 years. And obviously covered the crisis itself somewhat closely, and as you already referenced, wrote a book, did a very long documentary called House of Cards, and wrote a book as well called And Then the Roof Caved In. And as you might expect, it's hard to lay all the blame at the feet of any one entity or party. There's a great deal of shared blame when it comes to this crisis, as many have already said. I, having followed Wall Street for as long as I have, certainly, and focused on it for as long as I have, certainly lay a good portion of the blame, I think, at a lack of leadership on Wall Street, and a lack of ability by some of the leaders there, even though they knew better, to ultimately take some of the steps that they most likely should have taken to reduce risk and to have stopped playing in a game that they knew was a very dangerous one. Now, that doesn't extend to everybody. Some actually did do that. Others were not perhaps as aware of the risks as they might well have been. But nonetheless, I do think Wall Street does bear a great deal of the blame, broadly speaking, for the crisis that we found ourselves in the, let's call it, 07-08 time period, and then, of course, the period after that, in terms of the very deep recession that was caused by the financial calamity of that period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I ought to have put my own name on here before we got going any further. My name is Milana Vickers. I'm one of the writers of the FCIC, helping to produce the report. Let me just follow up on what you said, and you know, we've had a lot of material published, especially lately, a couple of big books, etc. I wonder if you have any thoughts on what it is that we as a commission could be trying to get at with the powers that we have, the access that we have, that maybe journalists haven't been able to get at as much as would be useful.
Yeah, you know, something I've always wondered about, and to a certain extent some of my reporting has led me there, but not completely. I do wonder about the boards of directors at a number of the big banks, and whether they fully understood what was happening at their banks, what their CEOs did or did not fully understand. I'm thinking of the likes of a Citigroup or a Merrill Lynch. Obviously, when it was a public company before it got bought by Bank America. I'm also talking about the board of the Bank of America. And I could go on and on, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, before their seizure by the government. But I would be curious in some way to sort of understand from a corporate governance perspective what it was that these boards, and these are difficult things for us to get hold of in the press, fully understood or about the risks being taken on by the institutions in which they served, and whether or not the strategy being employed by those CEOs was one that was fully cognizant of the risks that their institutions were taking on. I mean, we're talking about a very difficult subject area. There's no doubt about it. And I've seen some of the presentations that were made, for example, of the board of directors of Merrill Lynch on CDOs. Complicated, very difficult thing for, I think, a board to fully appreciate or understand. And even the information that they're given is not necessarily fully reflective of what actually is happening within the institution. So I completely understand how the boards in some ways might be blamed, but don't necessarily aren't necessarily fully to blame, or even partly in part because the information that they were receiving was not complete. But nonetheless, you know, with the power that the FCIC has, especially in some of those key financial institutions that the U.S. government had to bail out almost completely, AIG certainly comes to mind as well. What role did the board play or not play, and what can we hope for in terms of future corporate governance that might help avoid these kinds of scenarios down the road?
Yeah. I mean, certainly one hears a fair amount of, you know, well, we're at 35,000 feet, et cetera. But, you know, what do you think? You have obviously you're open at least to public response. You know, what do you think is as sort of public sentiment toward, you know, board responsibility on this kind of issue?
Listen, I still think boards fail too often, and I don't in their fiduciary duty to shareholders, and I don't think board members take their position lightly. I think most board members serve with serious purpose, but I just think it's a very difficult thing to ask, and yet one that we should hope to expect in some ways, that these board members are fully informed and understand the gravity of certain situations. You know, I think we do have the right to ask for that, and I think all too often they don't hold the CEOs as accountable as they might. They don't question them as diligently as they might. They rely only on the information they're given. I mean, a board member has the right to basically pick the phone up and talk to any single employee in the company in which they serve on the board, and speak to that person in confidence at any time. And yet I would imagine that that is hardly ever done. You know, did a board member ever pick the phone up and call up the head of Structured Products at Merrill Lynch or Citigroup or anything like that? We're trying to understand. These are all incredibly busy people. It's a very difficult thing. I'm not quite sure how you get better boards, but I still think we could use them.
Yeah. And, of course, we have the phenomenon of some of the personalities on these boards being familiar from political life and if not dual hatted, you know, one playing one role after another. Do you want to talk a little about the Fannie Freddie piece? I know in your book you're focused a lot on, you know, more than others are on, you know, some of this CDO structural stuff. But do you want to talk about Fannie and Freddie?
I mean, listen, Fannie and Freddie, I think, it was always a problem from its earliest days, just in terms of the way it was structured. This implicit, so it seemed, government guarantee, and yet this need by management to obviously maximize profits for the benefit of shareholders weren't necessarily things that existed in complement to one another.
Yeah.
I would say, and I've pointed this out a number of times, book and others, that I mean, I do hold Fannie and Freddie somewhat responsible for certain aspects of the crisis. They certainly ramped up their risk at exactly the wrong time. They came back into the securitization market to try to seize back market share that they had lost at exactly the wrong time. Yes, they were in some ways asked by their regulators and members of Congress to be aggressive. But I also think there's a fallacy out there, particularly on the right of the political spectrum, that likes to lay a lot of the blame, sort of this idea that the Community Reinvestment Act is what foisted all this upon us. Fannie and Freddie were pushed by that institutions to make all these loans or securitize these loans or create a market for these loans that that should never have been made. And in fact, that's just not the case. Vast majority of the institutions that actually were on the ground doling out subprime, so to speak, loans were not regulated whatsoever under CRA. And so I wish the critics would stop politicizing some of these things and just look at what the facts were. And the facts were and are ultimately that underwriting standards fell drastically, that Fannie and Freddie had pulled back from the market as a result of the accounting scandals that engulfed both of those firms, that Wall Street moved into that breach in a larger way than it had ever in the past, became the primary underwriter of all subprime, all day in that market of securitizing, and frankly couldn't care at all about the standards that were being applied by the lenders on the ground, almost all of whom, as I said, were not compliant with the CRA because they weren't banks. They were unregulated financial institutions.
Yeah. What about how you look back at, I mean, I assume you do see a role for there having been some risk in just the size of the market that Fannie and Freddie's activity had created by, you know, you're right, of course, the private label stuff takes over in 04, 05, but, you know, it's a heck of a market driven at least, largely by Fannie and Freddie up to that point. And I wonder when you look back on your coverage, you know, what's your assessment of, you know, whether it's Fannie and Freddie or whether it's CDOs as the product or whether it's any number of other aspects of this that are complicated. You know, what's your assessment of business journalism's record in all this? And I ask, you know, from the FCIC, but also as a career journalist and a longtime business journalist.
Yeah. Listen, I don't think we performed particularly well. I wish I had understood a lot of the things that I now understand or that I understood, let's call it, by the middle or late in 2007. But I did not understand at all as they were building in the system. I mean, I was not paying attention, frankly. That's just one of the things that I have a lot of things I pay attention to, but that was not something I was paying close attention to, was the growth of the mortgage market, the mortgage securitization market in this country in the period of 2004, let's call it, to 2006. It was not something that I focused my reporting on in any way, shape, or form. Difficult to understand as well, even when you look at the results from so many of the financial institutions, whether it was a Lehman Brothers or a Merrill Lynch or a Morgan Stanley or a Goldman Sachs, in terms of what they were doing in that market. You couldn't just see it. It wasn't something that was there in press releases. And even if you read their 10Qs or 10Ks, you'd have a difficult time understanding the risk. But, of course, a good reporter is doing more than just reading filings or press releases. You know, you're talking to people. And I certainly wish I had spoken to more people then and understood more prior to the onset of the crisis. That being said, I think I still, as a result of some very smart sources that I had along the way, got myself educated to the point where in the summer of 2007, I understood how dangerous a period we were already entering in terms of just what was the beginning then of what we've called the credit crunch. But, of course, we're well more than a year away from the ultimate sort of financial catastrophe we're about to have. But, yeah, there's no doubt that we all could have done better, always. Now, if we'd issued warnings and yelled and screamed about things, it's not clear to me that it would have made one bit of difference. I used to do a lot of that during the technology bubble of the 1990s, and nobody really cared, but all the same, I do wish there had been better reporting from myself and, you know, from my peers.
You say that in your epilogue. Sometimes you're tempted to get up out of your chair and say, "Stop, everybody!" What have we not learned yet?
What have we not learned when?
Yeah, well, yet, you know, when you're sitting there, you're still covering business, you know, and you say in your epilogue that you're tempted to get up out of your chair and warn how dangerous things still are. What are you referring to?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was actually written a little while ago, because this book was written in March of 2009. But listen, there's still, I think we are somewhat aware of a lot of the risks that are out there. Perhaps, in fact, these days people are more aware of the risks than they otherwise should be, preventing them from doing certain things that we'd like to see in terms of investment and things of that nature. There I'm talking about on the corporate level, but also on the personal level. But the big risks remain, and they are what you'd imagine. They're just this basic idea that now we've had this huge transfer of debt from private hands to public hands, which has ballooned the budget deficits of so many of the major Western economies. And the question is simply, are we going to have a day of reckoning there? How long can we continue to kick the can down the road, as people like to say? Or are we ultimately going to sort of be faced with another crisis? The next crisis won't be like the last one. It's always something different. But I do feel as though people at least are more aware of the vulnerability of the system than they were previously.
Well, does this make you, I guess you have a producer role as well, am I right?
Well, when on my documentaries, yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, does this make you look at the pieces of this crisis, say some of the component pieces more closely, like, where you looking more closely at what exactly a particular rating from a rating agency is? Or, that would be the most obvious one.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes it's more about, I don't know if I'm looking more closely at those kinds of things or that level of granularity. I certainly tell you I'm focused now in part on the municipal bond market in this country, the fiscal state of the states, trying to understand that more. Trying to understand why so few people seem to be truly concerned about it, in a way, even though you hear a lot about it.
Yeah. Well, they're linked. I'm partly referring to that. Those are rated products.
Absolutely. No, those are rated products. Well, listen, you guys, you know, at the end of the day, these rating agencies are still out there. I mean, I think I'm not alone at all in being somewhat surprised that they still even exist, frankly. And I'm curious just to see what ultimately happens there and whether some of the things, I guess, under Dodd-Frank that have been legislated will ultimately come to bear, or how exactly it's all going to work, I guess, in terms of the rating agencies.
Yeah. I mean, the dynamics of business reporting, at least on TV, and I guess you guys update on the internet as well, sort of prevent you from stepping back? Is there too much daily news for you to really alter too much your practices?
I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on the reporter. I've been able to hear do different things at CNBC that allow me occasionally to step back so I can do these two-hour documentaries at night, which we air at night, which, you know, you can spend over a year on. So that's an ability to sort of step back and try and take a broader picture. But I think all of us, when we're in the day-to-day of reporting, you can sort of lose sight of the forest and the trees, no doubt about it. But I do think it's sort of up to the, it's not necessarily a result of the medium as much anymore. Let's face it, I mean, print is sort of disappearing anyway. It's more up to the reporter and the organization, allowing that reporter to have at least a little bit of time to try and think about some of those issues. I don't feel like at CNBC I'm prevented from doing that.
Do you want to weigh in on the Fed or on regulators at all?
Not really. I mean, listen, the Fed, I guess. I do, you know, I had an opportunity to sit down with Alan Greenspan for, as you guys have, but for a fascinating hour and 40-minute interview some time back, since seen him as well in more casual settings. But, you know, I do wonder about his reasons for not having regulated more effectively. On the local level, so to speak, or the ground level in terms of all of the different mortgage brokers. His reasoning doesn't, in my mind, stand up to scrutiny in terms of why he chose not to. Obviously, he's come in for lots of criticism and for a variety of reasons, some of which probably is deserved, some of which is not. But I do look back on that period in time, again, sort of 04, certainly 05 and 06, early part of 07, where there was an opportunity early on in that time frame to perhaps have done some things that might have prevented some or prevented the prevented the cascade of events that ultimately got us where we are today. So, you know, I do think that blame is probably fairly applied there when it comes to his failure to regulate and use the tool set that was available to him, perhaps, to crack down on a lot of shoddy mortgage practices.
Yeah. I want to just take you back to something that you said earlier about, you know, by summer of 07, I mean, by summer of 07, there were people who still weren't figuring it out, even after ratings downgrades, they still weren't figuring it out. But I assume that's around the time horizon that you mean, that you were figuring it out.
Yeah, I mean, listen, talk about figuring it out, right? March 13th, I actually keep this up on my wall here, in my little cubicle. March 13th, 07, Henry Paulson, quote, "The fallout in subprime mortgages is going to be painful to some lenders, but it is largely contained." March 28th, 07, Ben Bernanke, "At this juncture, the impact on the broader economy and financial markets, the problems in the subprime market seems likely to be contained." October 15th, 07, Bernanke, "It's not the responsibility of the Federal Reserve, nor would it be appropriate to protect lenders and investors from the consequences of their financial decisions." I mean, you know, there are a lot of people who didn't understand what the heck was going on, and unfortunately for us, they're the very people who we were relying on to know what was going on.
Yeah. Just as a kind of an exercise, though, it would be interesting to know, you know, okay, by then you're fully aware, but before that you're... well, let me backtrack.
When I came into 07, I was not aware. A housing bubble? Sure. That's easy, right? A lot of people think there might have been a housing bubble. But I had no concept, frankly, of what, let's call it late 06, of what was truly had been going on in the mortgage market. I didn't understand all the securitization practices that had been taking place. I didn't understand the structured products that would be being created out of mortgage-backed securities. I didn't understand virtually any of the linkages between all of those different things. None. And then... luckily, I had one very smart hedge fund manager who started to make me aware of some of these things, and then I started to do what you need to do, which is just try and understand, educate myself. And so by the time July of 07 rolled around, by the time those Bear Stearns hedge funds started to unravel, I had always focused, what I've done here for many years is focused on mergers and acquisitions. So I had always had a focus on the private equity market, on the financing for large leverage buyouts, and I knew about practices in that market that clearly were indicative of a bubble, or certainly of a lack of appreciation for risk. But it was coupling that with what then I had learned about the mortgage market in, let's call it July of 07, where I started to, I think, at least understand that this was much more serious than a short-term event. This was something that could get deeper and deeper.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, you say you didn't link them, but were you like me? Did you not even know about the links? I mean, to what extent were you even aware of, for example, the components of the the credit markets?
What do you mean by the components of the credit?
Well, like treasuries, you know, non-financial corporate debt, like the sort of big players in credit markets.
Yeah, no, that I have an understanding for. I mean, I've covered the credit markets to a certain extent for many years, so I had a basic understanding of that, but what I hadn't understood was all of the different vehicles that had been created. Like, I'd never heard of a sieve, right, until that summer. And I hadn't appreciated all the different vehicles that had been created and the market that had been created around the world, frankly, to buy all of these securitized products that were being put out there by Wall Street firms that were based largely on mortgages and hence largely on whether housing prices would continue to go up.
And then
the linkage within the credit markets, I mean, I did sort of have some understanding of, but, you know, I had had no appreciation for how large the subprime mortgage market had become.
Yeah.
How large securitized products were. I had no clue until that period of time.
Out of curiosity. Yeah, out of curiosity, and feel free to say that you don't wish to answer this, but was your hedge fund source aware of it because it was a good shorting opportunity, or because he was investing? You know, he was on the long side.
No. Yeah, he was one of those who was betting against the mortgage market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to find his identity. It's more out of interest in the ability of people who were shorting it to see what more enthusiastic other players were not seeing. How long was?
Yeah, I mean these were people who were. You've actually had him testify. I mean, it's not a secret. It's in my book as well. It's a guy named Kyle Bass.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle's been a long, long time friend of mine. And is a really smart guy who started to see some things that without him I might not have understood, or he brought to my attention certainly, as he did his work to try to figure out what was going on and ultimately made a decision, you know, to short some of the residential mortgage-backed securities in the same way, obviously, that people well know that John Paulson did and some others did.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Anything else you want to add, or have we kind of covered the bases here?
I'm feeling pretty good. That's about it. And you guys have done a really good job. I'm looking forward to reading the full report. So.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time, and good luck.
Thanks very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.